Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and how the tech are you? It's time for the tech news for Tuesday, March 21st, 2023. First up, Google's bug hunting team found 18 zero-day vulnerabilities in Samsung hardware, specifically the Exynos chipsets. That's E-X-Y-N-O-S. So zero-day vulnerabilities, as the name suggests, are vulnerabilities that are in various technologies from day one that have been there since the technology came out and potentially are actively being exploited by hackers. And the Exynos chipsets are ARM-based system-on-a-chip chipsets. And they serve as the brains of stuff like certain smartphones and wearables and even some car systems. The team has been uncovering these vulnerabilities since late 2022. So it's not like this is brand new discoveries in all cases, but it has been ongoing. And at least four of them are considered severe vulnerabilities, potentially allowing an attacker to target any affected device as long as that attacker knows the associated phone number with the Exynos modem in that device. So if someone happened to own a smartphone with one of these chips as its processor, an attacker could potentially perform a remote code execution, or RCE, on that phone just by knowing that phone number. So you wouldn't have to even be tricked into doing anything, right? A lot of the vulnerabilities we hear about involve someone taking an action that they shouldn't have. They get a prompt, they respond to it, and that in turn creates the opportunity for an attacker to compromise a device. In this case, it literally just means that the attacker has to have the phone number of the target device. This is a massive security flaw, obviously, because then the attacker could force the victim's phone to run all sorts of different types of code. They could have the phone execute code that turns it into an espionage device, similar to the Pegasus stuff we talked about with iPhones a couple of years ago. Or maybe they could lock the phone in a sort of ransomware attack. Now, the other 14 flaws, because there were 18 total, four of them were super extreme. The other 14 are also bad news, but they don't pose the same critical risk as the four that I'm alluding to. Now, patches are going out in security updates, but patches are things that different companies roll out at different scales and at different timetables. So not all of the affected devices are necessarily able to be patched right now. That's a real serious issue that, you know, companies like Google have rolled out patches and security updates already. So as long as you're up to date on your security patches, you have presumably blocked off this potential attack vector. But the proposed workaround for those who are still waiting to get a patch is pretty extreme. It essentially involves shutting down both the call over Wi-Fi and voice over LTE functions of your phone. So essentially it means removing the phone from your phone. And I get it. A lot of y'all never use a phone as a phone anyway, right? Like a voice call is probably the last thing you would use your phone for, but it does strike me as particularly weird to remove the phone part from a phone. Anyway, some of the devices affected include the Pixel 6 and Pixel 7 from Google. A whole bunch of different Samsung mobile devices are affected, which isn't a surprise. They include the S22, the M12, the M13, the M33, and a whole bunch of devices that are in the A series of Samsung mobile devices. Not all A series, but a lot of them. Plus, any vehicles that have an Exynos Auto T5123 chipset, or any wearables that have the Exynos W920 chipset, are affected by this vulnerability, which is a big old yikes. By the way, this is a good reminder to activate real security updates when you get them, because security updates can address critical vulnerabilities like this one and prevent you from becoming a victim in the future. The only thing is that you should verify that a security update you receive is real first. So like, do just bare minimum research to make sure that yes, you know, whatever company has issued a security update. So if you are using, say, a Google Pixel device, just make sure that Google did in fact issue a security update. Just do a quick search to make sure that is a thing that has happened. And then yeah, install that as soon as you can, because it can potentially cut off attack vectors. Sometimes these updates can also affect other things on a device, which is a pain in the butt, but it's still better than having your phone compromised. So, you know, just a word out there. Google has recently banned a Chinese-based app from the Google Play Store. It is not TikTok, though we will talk about the besieged video-based social network a little later in this episode. No, it's Pinduoduo. Now, essentially, this app matches consumers with merchants for various products. It started out as an agricultural thing and went on to stuff like groceries, and now it's pretty much everything. So why is Google removing the app? Well, according to Google, the most recent version of the app contains malware of some sort. So Google suspended the app out of a concern for security. Reuters reached out to Pinduoduo and received a response that claims that Google has alerted the company that the app has been suspended, but that Google did not give any details as to why the app was suspended. Anyway, this isn't the first time that Pinduoduo has been in legal hot water here in the United States. One of the major issues that is often connected to it involves the counterfeiting of various goods. So essentially it's saying that Pinduoduo tends to match folks up with merchants who sell knockoff versions of designer or luxury goods. That is a big part of China's business as well, is just creating counterfeit goods that mimic high-end designer goods. It's a big problem in the designer good industry. I can't pretend like I fully understand it, because I'm basic. I don't do like the whole designer goods thing, because I have no class. Reuters also reports that Google reps have claimed that it was just an accident that certain communication records that could have been used as evidence against it in an upcoming trial in which the U.S. Justice Department is bringing antitrust charges against Google is scheduled to happen. So essentially, the Department of Justice is saying, hey, there's all these records that we potentially should have had access to, and you're deleting them. It's essentially like you're shredding documents because you anticipate a raid. And Google is saying, no, we didn't mean to delete anything. We were actually taking reasonable steps to preserve everything, but some stuff slipped through the cracks. Now, at the heart of the lawsuit are claims from most of the states here in the U.S. that Google has been using anti-competitive strategies to prevent any other company from getting a foothold in the search business. The DOJ suspects that Google has denied access to or deleted documents that would lend credence to their case against the company. And Google says, ah, that's ridiculous. We've already shared millions of documents with you. Now, I don't have eyes on this one. I have no idea if Google's claims are with or without merit. I don't know if Google, you know, intentionally deleted files that would have been damaging to the company's case, or if this truly was just something that happened without any malice involved. I will say it's not a good look. I mean, anytime documents go missing, that isn't exactly a ringing endorsement of your claims of being innocent. But yeah, I don't know one way or the other. TechCrunch has a piece titled Facebook Political Micro-Targeting at Center of GDPR Complaints in Germany. So GDPR, if you are not in the know, is a set of regulations that are centered around protecting EU citizen personal information. And if you want to do business in the EU, if you're a digital company and you want to have any sort of business practices within the European Union, complying with GDPR is a really big deal. In fact, there are entire consulting companies out there designed to help other companies make sure that their business practices are in alignment with GDPR. Because if you don't comply with it, then your company can get hit with massive fines or even being denied access to doing business within the European Union, which would be a huge deal, right? So in this case, what has happened is that Facebook has used micro-targeting to direct political advertisements to German citizens without first getting their express consent to make such use of their personal data. And the EU assigns different levels of importance to different kinds of personal information. So things like your political leanings, that's way, way, way up there. That's highly protected information. So there is a high bar to clear if you are going to make use of that personal information in any way. And according to the charges, Meta / Facebook totally failed to do that. Like, they should have gotten the express consent of each and every person who's information they used to sell micro-targeting ads, that they did, and they didn't do that. And arguably, just as bad, if not worse, is that every single political party in Germany took advantage of Meta's disregard for the GDPR regulations. So whether it was a far-right political party, far-left, and everything in between, all of them used micro-targeting to deliver advertising messages, including messages that contradicted each other from the same party, just based on micro-targeting of individuals. So, for example, one party might have sent out a message to someone who is identified as being very pro-climate change regulations as saying, we're the party that is pursuing climate protection over everything else, so believe in us. But that same party might have identified someone else as being more in tune with personal freedom over climate regulation, as saying, we believe in the climate just like you do, but we also believe you should be able to travel wherever you want, whenever you want. So we're about protecting the climate without infringing on personal liberty. These two messages cannot coexist from the same party, right? You cannot stay true to both simultaneously. If you're telling one person, we're going to protect the climate at all costs, and you're telling someone else, we'll protect the climate, but we're not going to crimp your style. Those are two messages that cannot be true at the same time. And the point is that if the same party is delivering these two contradictory messages, they are lying to someone, or they're lying to everyone, at least one person, but possibly everybody. And ultimately, it undermines the democratic process, because you cannot trust the messages coming out of a political party if those messages are contradictory of one another. It destroys democracy itself. Fun times. Anyway, an advocacy group, NOYB, has really cranked up the pressure here, and I would argue for very good reason, and that NOYB is putting pressure on EU officials to enforce the rules under GDPR. Like, they've created these rules, and NOYB is saying, clearly these rules are not being followed, so it's your job to get in here and to actually enforce them, and to get things like explicit consent before any of this kind of data can be used for micro-targeting advertising, as well as, you know, putting some pressure on the political party system within Germany to obey the laws that these political parties are actually, you know, supposed to uphold in the first place. So yeah, pretty big expose when you look at it in that term. And I'm very curious where it goes from here. Okay. We've got some more news to cover. Before we get to that, let's take a quick break. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
When your child fights sleep, it can feel like a battle you'll never win. Imagine a bedtime routine you all look forward to, where you cuddle in and let the stress of the day melt away. Welcome to Sleep Tight Stories, a calming weekly podcast that brings bedtime stories, cuddles, and comfort to families worldwide. The stories are quirky, relatable, and spark wonder without overstimulation, so listeners can fall asleep and stay asleep. Each episode is narrated by me, Cheryl McLeod, a second grade teacher, and written by my husband, Clark, an eternal second grader at heart. Tune in tonight and bond over a story before drifting off to sleep. Make bedtime the sweetest part of your day. Sleep tight stories. Listen to Sleep Tight Stories on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Russia is gearing up for its own presidential election. That'll happen in 2024. And now election officials in Russia have a new directive. Ditch the iPhone. So Reuters has reported that the Kremlin has ordered all officials connected with the 2024 Russian presidential election, which I am sure will be absolutely straightforward and fair, will have to stop using Apple iPhones, reportedly due to concern that Western intelligence agencies could be working with Apple, or maybe even without Apple's knowledge and participation, to leverage iPhones in order to gather intelligence. I mean, this could sound familiar because we certainly have worried about Russia doing the exact same sort of thing, not through the iPhone, but through various means to inject misinformation and to affect elections across the United States, to undermine the democratic process. So Russian officials are kind of worried that the same thing's going to happen in Russia. Now, I don't have a lot of faith in the fairness of the Russian election system, if I'm being totally honest, but I also think that perhaps the officials have a point here. I don't think that Apple would work so closely with U.S. authorities on this. I don't think Apple would comply and allow their phones to be turned into surveillance devices. Apple has a history of resisting U.S. government efforts to leverage Apple's abilities to do this kind of thing. Apple famously resisted the FBI's efforts to create a backdoor entry point for Apple's systems, saying that no, that compromises user security and privacy, and it compromises our reputation with our customers. So I don't think Apple would necessarily be on board for any official attempt to surveil a foreign election process. However, we have seen companies, surveillance companies, creating apps that exploit vulnerabilities in iOS devices in the past. You know, we saw that with an Israeli company creating the Pegasus app that would turn an iPhone into a spy device just by sending a message through iMessage. Apple has since patched out that vulnerability, but the point is, we have seen that in the past. And really, anytime you're talking about relying upon a device that's going to send data out of the country you're in to another country that might be, if not outright hostile, at least wary of the one you live in, there are concerns, right? Because if you don't have full control of the information chain, then there are worries about how that could impact national security. So while I don't think everything's on the up and up in Russia necessarily, I do also understand the concern about officials relying upon technology that is created in a country that at least is wary of Russia, if not outright hostile at times. So I get the security concern. It's not really a surprise. I don't even think it's really an indictment against Apple, because again, Apple does not have a reputation of working alongside U.S. government to that degree. But allegedly, all election officials will need to be free of iPhones by April 1st. Stanford has introduced Alpaca AI, which, according to researchers, performs on a level similar to GPT-3.5. That's the previous generation of OpenAI's language model. But the surprising thing is that these researchers spent about $600 developing their Alpaca AI. You know, OpenAI has had billions of dollars of investments poured into it, and apparently these Stanford researchers were able to achieve a similar outcome to the previous generation of GPT for just $600. So they started with Meta's open source Llama 7B language model. So this is Meta's own large language model. It is not the same one that OpenAI uses. And Meta allows academics to access these models for a price. The 7B model is the cheapest and smallest of the large language models, and that's the one the researchers went with. So they saved some money by going with that. Then they used OpenAI's GPT to generate sample conversations, around 52,000 sample conversations, to train, to post-train their own AI model. So they made use of OpenAI's official GPT research tools to do that. That cost a few hundred bucks. Then they made some tweaks and some adjustments, and they ended up with an AI language model that can perform really well against GPT itself, like almost at the same level. I think in something like almost 180 tests, 90 showed their AI model outperforming GPT, and in 89 cases, GPT outperformed the AI model. So they're essentially neck and neck. As New Atlas, the website New Atlas, points out, the research shows that if you have the right tools at your disposal, you can potentially create your own large language model for AI and then build stuff on top of that, like chatbots and whatnot. And while Meta limits access to Llama to academics and such, the problem is someone leaked the code online. So while you officially have to be an academic to get access to Llama, if you're the unethical type, you can just grab the code online. It is available out there, and you can start to develop your own language model and your own work based on top of that. This means we could be at the beginning of an era of chatbot explosions and AI activations, all powered by similar but independent language models. It's entirely possible that some or even many of these will lack the restrictions that we see OpenAI putting on top of its own products like ChatGPT. You know, OpenAI works hard to try and limit things like, racist or misogynistic or transphobic language from being generated through its tools. And, obviously we've also seen issues with the reliability of information generated through tools like ChatGPT. So the fear is that these new tools, which could be pretty easy to make yourself based upon this research project, won't have those safeguards in place, and that we could see a lot more misinformation or abuse of such systems, maybe using systems to try and trick people with phishing attacks, all sorts of different tactics that could be harmful could be coming down the road, because we've already seen the barrier to entry is not that high. And if you're able to figure out a way to exploit that and make a whole lot of money, maybe you'd be willing to take that unethical route and create a whole new generation of victims out there. Oh, brave new world to have such chatbots in it. And on the topic of ChatGPT, recently, a bug started showing users the title and short description of ChatGPT sessions that were not their own. You would look at your history and start seeing stuff that you definitely did not do. So users were having the titles and short descriptions of their chat sessions shared with other users without their consent, and this was not by design. This is a good time to remind everyone that if you are using ChatGPT, you should not share sensitive information in ChatGPT conversations, because you never know when those conversations could become public. So if you were using ChatGPT to, maybe draft a resignation letter, but maybe you aren't seriously considering leaving your job, you're just kind of toying with the idea, and you have ChatGPT draft a resignation letter for your behalf, well, that could end up being awfully awkward if your chat session title and description then gets shared with somebody else, but without your permission. And now people have the impression that you are leaving your job. That could create all sorts of complications in your life that you probably don't want to have to deal with. That's just one example. What if you were drafting, a love letter to your crush? I mean, like, there's all sorts of things that you could have been using ChatGPT to do, even just for fun, that you probably don't want people to see. So in my case, if people were to see my history with ChatGPT, They would probably see how I was trying to get ChatGPT to compose a Shakespearean sonnet about AI. Or there was one time when I asked it to create an episode of Tech Stuff. I was just curious what would happen. And I told it to create an episode of Tech Stuff about ChatGPT, which I had already done an episode about ChatGPT. So it's not like I was trying to get out of doing my work, y'all. That's not what this was about. I was just curious what would happen. Like, would it actually sound like one of my episodes? The answer is no, it did not sound anything like one of my episodes. It created an interview with a fake ChatGPT representative. So if I had actually recorded the episode, I would have had to invent a person who supposedly worked at OpenAI who would be talking about ChatGPT in an authoritative way, which seems unethical at the very slightest. But anyway, OpenAI shut down ChatGPT for a short while yesterday evening, and they took the chat history offline for a while. They are reportedly starting to roll that back into service, but it might be a while before all users are actually able to access their chat histories. So there may be a while before you're able to see back on, you know, the stuff you had been talking about with ChatGPT in the past. The Verge's Tom Warren has a great article titled "Microsoft's New Copilot Will Change Office Documents Forever." This kind of, again, falls in line with AI and chatbots. So Tom Warren was in a Microsoft Teams meeting with Microsoft reps to talk about Copilot. That's Microsoft's AI feature that's going to be incorporated into all Office products moving forward. During the meeting, the reps turned Copilot on to do stuff like take notes about the Microsoft Teams meeting. At the conclusion of the meeting, Warren actually received these notes, which included a recap of all the questions he had asked during the interview. And it sounds like Copilot can help users take advantage of Office products as if the user was an elite user. Maybe you are an elite user in one or two Office products, or maybe all of them. Or maybe you know someone who is, like someone who just knows all the different tricks to create the most, you know, snazzy and effective presentation, or they're able to create really helpful graphs and charts out of Excel sheets. Like, there's an art to it. You know, you can learn the basic steps and do a fine job, but to do something really effective requires a little more work. And, you know, it sounds to me like Copilot can actually help you achieve those things, and not only help you do them, but also teach you how to do them yourself. So it's not just like a magic wand that makes things better, but a tutorial tool that can help you learn how to take advantage of features that maybe you never even knew existed. It's kind of like the old Microsoft Clippy, but on steroids. Warren also mentions that the reps from Microsoft acknowledge that the tool is good, but it's not perfect, that it can make mistakes. It can generate stuff that isn't appropriate, and that human review and interaction is still very much a needed part of the process, that you can't just step back and let Office do all the work for you. This is a collaborative approach to work, not one where AI takes over for you. I recommend you pop on over to The Verge and read the piece to learn more. I do think the messaging from Microsoft is pretty good here, that these tools are meant to augment but not replace your own skills. That is the approach to AI that I find the most intriguing, and certainly far less concerning than the doomsday scenarios we often hear about how AI is going to take all of our jobs. The Verge also has a piece titled "Text to Video AI Inches Closer as Startup Runway Announces New Model." And yeah, the article is pretty much what it sounds like. Just as DALL-E and Midjourney can generate images based on text inputs, Runway can generate short snippets of video. And soon Runway Gen 2 will release and show the progress of this technology. It is not a high fidelity or photorealistic experience so far. The video I've seen has been in fairly low resolution and has elements in it that don't look real, so you can tell it's like computer generated. But the demonstrations are pretty fascinating. You just type in a simple description of what you want to see. And, you know, the more descriptive you are, both about the scene you want to see and the kind of camera work you want, will affect the clip that Runway generates. Runway also offers a suite of AI-powered video editing tools that can do stuff like help remove a background from a video or stabilize a camera and all that kind of stuff. But the Gen 2, the big thing is that it's able to just create entire video clips. Obviously, AI-generated video opens up new opportunities for abuse, so it's not all wine and roses here. Like, there are some real, potentially harmful uses of this technology. But the actual videos so far, again, they're not photorealistic, and they sometimes include stuff that just, you know, gives it away that's a computer-generated clip. So it's not quite to the point where we can never believe anything on video ever again, but we're getting there. Okay, I've got a few more stories to cover. Before I get to that, let's take another quick break. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver. And this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courteney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Last week, I mentioned that after Baidu demonstrated its own Ernie chatbot, investors were initially disappointed in the company, and we saw stocks fall. They recovered a bit afterward as Baidu opened up Ernie to a small group of testers who demonstrated their own interactions with the bot. And so investors started to come around a little bit on that. And Reuters reports that the chatbot has some pretty big blind spots that are not going to surprise you in the least. Namely, if you ask the chatbot questions about, say, Xi Jinping, the president of China, then Ernie Bot will say it hasn't learned how to answer those kinds of questions. Similarly, Reuters found that if they asked about, you know, sensitive or taboo subjects such as the events at Tiananmen Square in 1989, Ernie would suggest changing the subject. This is pretty much in line with how China limits and censors internet content on politically sensitive subjects. And in the interest of fairness, I should point out that OpenAI's version of ChatGPT has its own limitations. When that model was first put out, it would not answer questions about developing news or breaking news or anything because it would only have access to information from 2020 and earlier, as I recall. So there were limitations on what it could talk about. So it wasn't necessarily censorship so much as it was OpenAI trying to avoid issues where their tool could be used to, you know, frame news in a particular perspective or bias. So it's not unheard of here either. I should say also Microsoft's Bing incorporation of ChatGPT lifted those limitations. You could ask about developing news on that platform. While TikTok continues to argue for its own existence in the US, the company has introduced new rules about AI deepfake videos. A lot of thematic similarities in our stories today. The new rules say that synthetic and manipulated media must be clearly disclosed as such. So in other words, if a video uses deepfake technology, it needs to make that clear in the video itself. Otherwise, it might be seen as attempting to pass itself off as the legit article and thus will be subject to moderation, like being deleted or whatever. Further, deepfakes of private individuals are strictly off the table. You can't make a deepfake of some private citizen. That is against the rules. The only deepfakes that are allowed are of public figures, and again, they have to be disclosed as being deepfakes. And in deepfake videos, you cannot make the public figure do stuff like endorse something, because that is a violation of the rules. It is creating a perceived relationship where none actually exists. You also can't have a deepfake version of a celebrity doing stuff like calling for violence or spreading hate speech. These are against the terms and conditions of TikTok, so those would also be in violation of the rules. I think this would be an important step, even if TikTok were not facing political pressure from all corners at the moment. But certainly, as there is unprecedented security directed at TikTok right now, these new rules, I think, are a necessity, especially in the wake of descriptions of stuff like the Runway Gen 2 tool that's coming out. Deepfakes are already a big problem. The ability for AI to replicate voices is a big problem. It's just going to get worse. So creating rules about these things is really, really important. Italy's AGCM, which is a consumer watchdog group, has launched an investigation into TikTok, alleging the platform does not do enough to stop videos that promote harmful content, ranging from videos that promote eating disorders to encouraging suicide. So these videos violate the terms and conditions of TikTok. It is against the rules. But what the watchdog is saying is that TikTok isn't doing enough to enforce those rules. The AGCM is focusing on TikTok Technology Limited. That's a branch of TikTok that's based in Ireland. It's responsible for consumer relations in Europe. And the event that apparently prompted this investigation was a string of viral videos about a quote-unquote French scar challenge. The fact that I had to look up what the heck that was is really a bummer. And if you're curious, essentially it involves pinching the skin along a line to create the illusion that you have a faded but permanent scar, typically on your face. But this can actually cause permanent damage itself. If you're pinching so hard, you can actually create a permanent line on your face, and that fake scar essentially becomes a real scar. That's not super cool. AGCM expressed concern not just about this particular trend, but the overall problem of such content going viral without moderators stepping in to enforce the rules. Amazon is laying off another 9,000 employees. This is after a previous round of layoffs affected 18,000 staff, which means this year Amazon will have laid off about 9% of its global corporate workforce. That's a lot of people, you know, 27,000 people. The upcoming layoffs are expected to impact divisions like Twitch, Amazon Web Services, or AWS, which previously was one of the most profitable divisions within Amazon, and advertising departments, among others. CEO Andy Jassy cited an uncertain economy as the reason the company is holding these layoffs. It's a popular phrase to yell right now. Apparently around 400, actually more than 400 of those cuts will affect Twitch, which recently saw its CEO Emmett Shear resign his position. It's hard for me to feel bad about a company as huge as Amazon, but I definitely do feel empathy for all the people affected by these layoffs, both the ones directly affected and their coworkers who then have to figure out how to proceed without the input of the people who were just laid off. And I definitely hope all those who are directly affected by these layoffs land on their feet in this increasingly uncertain economic climate. That is a very rough position to be in, and I wish you all the best. Amazon itself is facing several government investigations, and Politico reports that some of these could be leading to lawsuits brought against Amazon by the federal government of the United States. So Amazon's already involved in state-level lawsuits regarding things like consumer laws and accusations of anti-competitive practices, such as promoting Amazon-owned brands over competitors when you go into search results. But these new lawsuits would be federal-level charges, not state-level. So it would significantly turn up the heat on Amazon. Some of the potential moves could force Amazon to divest itself of companies that it has already acquired. One of them could potentially push Amazon to divest itself of iRobot. That's the company that makes the Roomba vacuum cleaners. Amazon may also face charges alleging that Amazon products like the Ring security doorbell system potentially violates the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, or COPPA. And there are other investigations that could conceivably lead to different types of lawsuits. And it sounds like it's a multi-pronged attack and a sign that the U.S. government is taking a much harder regulatory stance when it comes to big companies in general, but specifically big tech companies. Okay, that's it. That's the news for Tuesday, March 21st, 2023. Hope you are all well. If you would like to reach out to me, do so on Twitter. The handle for the show is TechStuffHSW. Or you can download the iHeartRadio app. It's free to download, free to use. Type TechStuff in the little search field. You'll see the TechStuff podcast page pop up. Click into that. You'll see a little microphone icon. And if you use that, you can leave a voice message up to 30 seconds in length to let me know what you would like to hear in the future. And I'll talk to you again really soon. TechStuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.